and the kite is trying to move into that pressure, lower pressure zone.
Okay, so big question is, Gordy, how do we bring it down gently?
Well, bringing it in requires more pressure than letting it out, because you're going to be pulling against the wind. When you're letting it out, you're letting it go into the wind. So we're going to reel it in.
Now, can I try winding it, bringing
sure.
it in?
Yes. Here you go. Just don't let go of it. You want to keep it tense.
Okay, I'm feeling tense.
Okay.
Does the kite feel my tension? I'm feeling tense.
It started to dive there.
How similar is this to furling a sail or rolling a sail back up in, or bringing a sail down in sailing?
Not similar.
Okay.
It's not similar. So, because
I'm
when
definitely
you're
not ready for a sailboat then. Okay.
When you're taking a sail down, you want to head straight into the wind so that the sail is luffing, so that it doesn't keep any wind in its sail, so there's no tension. So just to be clear, sailing and flying a kite have a lot in common, but pulling a kite in and taking a sail down are totally different activities. The tension. Walk back, bring it up. Okay, if you hold this.
You hold this. Oh!
This, hold this.
Yeah, got it. Okay, bring it in. Good
right.
job.
Whew. Now for some breezy conversation. Breezes, which we frequently experience when we step outside, result when cooler air rushes in to replace some air that, because it's heated, rises up out of the way. This phenomenon is not limited to Earth, of course. Before the mission ended in 2022, NASA's InSight lander, a robotic mission to Mars, using its seismometer and air pressure sensor, picked up 10 to 15 mile per hour winds blowing across the Elysium Planitia on the planet. Those vibrations are within the range of human hearing, but NASA has sped them up by a factor of 100 to make them more audible. Take a listen to the sound of winds blowing across the red planet. I asked author Simon Winchester about wind on other worlds. Simon, you speak of how Earth is so dependent on the wind, at least the humans on the Earth are. Let's just briefly consider some of the other bodies that we know about in the solar system in particular. For Mars and the Moon, I mean, there's no atmosphere on the Moon, not any wind. But Mars, that's different. And the wind speeds on Mars can get very, very high. What would it be like to be standing on Mars, if you could, without a suit, to feel winds that, you know, were above 100 miles an hour?
Many times above 100 miles an hour. You wouldn't feel it. I mean, you'd be dead instantly for all sorts of reasons. But I think the most amusing story of an astral body was the Americans, when they sent the first men to the moon in 1969, knew they had to commemorate it with, inevitably, a flag. And so they devised a system that, strapped to the leg of the lunar landing module, were some aluminium tubes with a flagpole and then a horizontal member from which you strung a flag. And so when they got off the vehicle, they stuck this aluminium thing in the soil and the horizontal bar from it. The horizontal bar had a slight kink in it, because the people planning this event realized that because there was no wind, the flag would not flutter, would not seem to be fluttering. And so this flag, now suspended from this slightly curved horizontal bar, did appear in the pictures, with Neil Armstrong saluting and Buzz Aldrin doing the same thing a few seconds later. It appeared to be flying. It appeared to be fluttering in the wind. But of course, there was none. It was a complete fake. And the irony of all that was that 3 days later, when the lunar lander then took off to go back to Cape Canaveral, the exhaust gases created the first wind the moon had ever known and blew the flag over, and it's never been found since. So America created wind on the moon and destroyed the memorial that they hoped they would leave behind.
So, Simon, do you think the fact that, you have the American flag fluttering in the lunar breeze, as it were, has, kind of stiffened the resolve of people who claim that we never went to the moon?
not the least of them being that great climatologist and intellectual Kim Kardashian, who very recently said this is evidence, the fact that the flag appeared to be fluttering, evidence it was all done in a Hollywood sound studio and that the whole thing was a conspiracy. I mean, conspiracy theories and the work of lobbyists and so forth appears in all manner of discussions about wind, most notably with the whole history of wind energy. I mean, you'll be aware that now of the world and indeed the ocean, peppered with great big windmills churning out tons and tons of energy. And who is opposing it? Well, obviously the fossil fuel lobby, who want the oil and coal industries to flourish and wind and solar to perish. This is not a new thing. It's been going on for donkey's years. And indeed, the inventor, the first person to build a wind-powered generator, was a Scotsman in near Aberdeen. And he built this in his garden. He built a windmill. And by this time, we knew from the work of Faraday that you rotate a copper coil between the poles of a magnet, it generates electricity. And our man had bought a number of Edison light bulbs, which Edison had just invented the light bulb. So he creates this windmill, puts it on his roof. It generates so much electricity that he goes down the road in a little village in Aberdeenshire called Marykirk, saying, I can give you light bulbs, I can give you batteries full of electricity that I've made from the wind. And to a man, everyone on his street said, ah, well, thank you, but no, wind-generated electricity is the work of the devil. We don't want it. The only good electricity is that generated from coal, which lies beneath the streets of this little town, all owned by the local coal mine owners, who said, we don't want this newfangled wind generator. We want to supply coal. So the fossil fuel lobby was hard at work when James Blythe, that was the name of the man, I should have mentioned it, when James Blythe was operating in the 1880s, just as it is today. There's nothing new under the sun.
I think that, to my mind, the problem with wind generation of energy, as well as some other schemes that take advantage of natural circumstances, is how you store the energy. You know, when the wind dies, the demand is still there. So it all sounds to me like a battery problem, but maybe I'm just naive.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And batteries are the big thing. Now, I live in a little village in the Berkshires, and I have solar power. But I don't have a battery. But batteries are coming along. They're quite expensive. And they will be. I mean, look at cars, you know, battery-powered cars all over the place now. So, yes, the fossil fuel lobby is powerful, but it's losing. It's losing energy.
Well, finally, Simon, can you imagine if we had this conversation, say, not next week, but, you know, 20 years from now or 50 years from now, and we were discussing the wind? Would there be any new understandings or new applications of the wind? I mean, this is obviously hard to predict. That would be talking about that would make our current idea of what the wind is good for seem kind of, you know, prosaic.
That's very interesting. I do wonder, the jet stream, which we alluded to just a few moments ago, has never truly been harnessed. The only place you see it at on the Earth is that plume of snow moving to the east from the summit of Mount Everest, which you can see if you're at Everest Base Camp. That is the jet stream. A jet stream, which I might say, was first discovered by a Japanese scientist in the 1930s, who wrote papers saying, using balloons, I've discovered this new phenomenon called the jet stream. Very high speed snakes of wind at very high altitudes. But no one paid any attention to him. And he wrote 18 papers saying, I've discovered the jet stream. The reason that no one responded to his discovery is that he didn't write the papers in English or in Japanese, but in Esperanto. No one read Esperanto, and so nobody read his paper. And so he, to this day, I'm hoping this book will help it, but Mr. Professor Oishi, his name is, didn't get credit for discovering the jet stream. If someone can harness the jet stream, and that would clearly have to be an object in space, a generating machine as a satellite, propelled by or static and letting the jet stream blow through it, that might generate electricity, which could then be transmitted wirelessly down to Earth. That might be something people look into when we talk again half a century from now.
Well, good luck with inventing a satellite that just hovers without moving. I think that might be difficult. You could have it hover over the same place today with a geosynchronous satellite, but that wouldn't, of course, be sensitive to the wind too far above the surface of the Earth, I think. Well, Simon Winchester, thank you very much for speaking with us today.
Well, I'm delighted. It was enormous fun. Thank you.
The summer wind came blowing in from across the sea.
Journalist Simon Winchester is the author of The Breath of the Gods on the History and Future of the Wind. All right, Seth, well, that brings us to the big picture. What are your thoughts about wind?
Well, I've enjoyed talking about wind, Molly. To begin with, I spent a lot of time living in Holland, and they have a lot of windmills there. And, of course, they weren't for generating electricity. They were for grinding up foodstuffs and stuff like that. But, you know, they were very picturesque, and they were a serious source of energy for a very long time. Now, as far as kites go, I have to say, when I was a kid, of course, kite flying was kind of a big deal because where I lived, it was an apartment development that happened to be right next to a fairly big hill. So, you know, on a summer day when there was a little bit of a breeze, you could go down to that hill and you'd find lots and lots of people flying kites. And in fact, there were in later years, there were competitions to not just fly the kite higher, but to fit them out with wires and so forth so that you could cut the strings of your competitors there on the hill. So it became kind of a mean-spirited thing.
Oh my goodness, competitive kite flying. Now we talked about the absence of wind on the moon and the winds of Mars. What about the other bodies in the solar system, Seth? Are they windy places?
Well, some are. I mean, what you really need for wind is only an atmosphere. And, of course, temperature differentials from one place to another in that atmosphere. So places like Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, Neptune, they all have winds. And in some cases, they're very substantial winds.
So substantial that you probably could not fly a kite there.
Yeah, maybe not. I mean, flying a kite has other problems. You might want to breathe. So that's an issue, too. But the strength of the winds is such that it probably ought to be a fairly sturdy kite if you want to fly it on Jupiter. And the other thing is, don't forget to bring your spacesuit, because otherwise you're going to have a hard time breathing on Jupiter.
This show would not be possible without the uplifting contributions of senior producer Gary Niederhoff, assistant producers Shannon Rose Geary and Brian Edwards, and contributor Sikon Akbon. I am the executive producer of Big Picture Science, Molly Bentley.
I'm astronomer Seth Shostak. Also, big thanks to our listeners and our Patreon supporters.
The original music in the show is by Dewey DeLay and June Miyake. This episode of Big Picture Science that looks at why sometimes invisible forces have big effects is called Where the Wind Blows.
Thank you.
Collins, and you're listening to KBOO in Portland.
This is Bird Note. I'm J. Drew Lanham, an ornithologist, naturalist, and writer, and this is a note I've written to a bird I love. Dear Pileated Woodpecker, first off, do you prefer a long eye or short? Just want to make sure I start off right. Personally, I go for the pileated pronunciation and not the pileated one. Potato, potato, right? Speaking of names, been wondering what you think of all the Lord God bird stuff, people mistaking you for the long-lost ivory bill woodpecker. I mean, after all, that huge ivory bill used to give you guys a run for your biggest pecker money back in the day. Yeah, I know, the difference is obvious, but trust me, I know what it's like for someone to see big and black and fall to assumption. Exhausting, ain't it? Anyway, just wanted you to know I appreciate all that mistaken identity nonsense you put up with, and it's pretty awesome the way your calls make even the suburban woodlots seem like faraway wildness. I really don't like the whole Hen of the Woods name some folks gave you way back when, but I'll let you choose the best name for you. Hoping the hammering headaches aren't too bad and the profiling doesn't cost you your own identity. All best, Drew.
Listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next is Jazz Lives, right after these news headlines.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7